Yes. Yes, Cymru Radio. Yes. Radio Free Wales.
Yes. Hello, good evening, and welcome to the edition of the Radio Yes Cymru podcast, which is on your favourite podcast app and also on the Yes Cymru YouTube channel. My guest tonight is Anthony Slaughter, who's leader of the Wales Green Party. And as astute readers of the independence debate in Wales know, the Green Party supports independence, has been for a couple of years now. So there's a lot of big questions to ask, Anthony, about how the Green Party got the position, why it got the position, the benefits, as you see, of independence, and maybe the tensions also within the party and the general Green move around this question, which some people maybe feel is a national question, and that in some way rubs against their internationalism, which is also a part of the Green movement, as we know. So, Anthony, welcome to the Radio Yes Cymru podcast with me, Sean Robbins.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite, Sean.
I'm up in Aberystwyth, and you're down here in Penarth, if I remember correctly.
Penarth, yes, that's right.
So, two beautiful seaside towns.
Yes.
Our prom is bigger, Anthony, if I might just say. But I'm very, very fond of going out to Penarth for a trip. So, let's start from the top. So, the Wales Green Party came out, if I'm correct, about 2 years ago, and you spoke at the Melin Drafod Independence Summit last January 2023.
Yeah.
And how has that been? And why, as I said, let's start with the point that the Green Party is part of the Wales and England Green Party, England and Wales Green Party, but the party in Wales supports independence. So has there been a tension around that, and how has that come about?
Well, if I first explain the setup at the moment, yeah, it's the Green Party of England and Wales. Wales Green Party is a semi-autonomous branch of the Green Party of England and Wales. So we refer to it now as bi-national parties. It's the nine English regional parties and the Green Party of Wales. So we have our own conference. So it's our own leadership team. We set our own policy on devolved areas and areas affecting Wales. So it's an evolving relationship, because as some of your viewers, listeners will know, the Scottish Greens left in the 90s. They went off and formed their own independent party. And then the Irish formed their own parties quite soon after that. So, as I said, we make our own policy. Like all Green parties, we're grassroots democratic organisations. So members make policy at conference. I've been leader. I was elected leader at the end of 2019. So I've been leader since then. I previously served two terms as deputy in 2014, 2015. And it was at our conference in October 2020 when a member brought the motion that Wales Green Party should unambiguously support independence for Wales and would campaign for independence in a referendum. Yeah. Prior to that, the last 5 years, we'd had a policy that Wales Green Party supported as much devolution up to and including independence as the people of Wales ever voted for in a referendum, which was a bit of a fudge, saying we'll go along with what the people of Wales ask for. And there was a strong push from our membership. Now, we need to be clear about this. We do support Welsh independence. And as it was my first conference as leader, I welcomed that we were talking about it. I was slightly apprehensive. Do we need to have a big, potentially divisive discussion in my very first conference as leader? What was surprising was it was virtually unanimous support in the room. People were really behind us. Something had shifted. If we'd had that motion to conference a few years earlier, it might not have got through. And I think that reflected the political atmosphere. Post-Brexit, Brexit was starting to bed in, and we were starting to see the Westminster power grab, things like internal markets bill, not yet the shared prosperity fund, but people were starting to realise that perhaps people talking about independence of Wales were on the right track. We could do better on our own in Wales as an independent nation. And also, one thing I often remind people of, the Green Party is an internationalist party that believes in localism. Subsidiarity is key to Green Party ethos, so why wouldn't we support Welsh independence? So it was, October 2020 when it came out. I've been really pleased and excited by the response that's got. As you said, the Melin Drafod event, the All Under One Banner Yes Cymru rally in Swansea. People have welcomed the fact that the Greens are on board, this slightly different perspective and overlap on some. And it has really helped, I think, make us a political party of Wales. It feels so much more like a Welsh political party now than it did when I first got involved back in 2010, 2012. And that comes on to, segues quite nicely onto your point that, yes, we are the Green Party of England and Wales. And before we took that decision on independence, a lot of people would quite often throw that in our face. Because you're the Green Party of England and Wales, you must be a unionist party.
Yeah.
And it goes back to my point about subsidiarity. Absolutely not. We believe, again, power being devolved. But it has obviously created tension. We're going to go into the next Senate election as a party campaigning and supporting Welsh independence. And there is a tension there. And it's interesting to see that Labour are starting to explore that tension as well. About, you know, they want more devolution of their rule book to Wales from London, from England. So we've had members, we had a conference motion last year, I believe it was, that what we should do is set up a conference instructed Welsh Green Party executive to set up a working group to examine, to spend 1 year examining the actual logistics of becoming a separate party.
Right.
Because some people will be aware, when I wasn't in the leadership team on the executive, when Grenville Ham was leader, there was a big push to be a separate party then from a small number of people. It was done very, very top down. They had a referendum of the members the year after Brexit, as if no one had learnt any lessons about quit. So in had been referendums we haven't actually done the homework for.
Yeah.
And I think the leadership got quite surprised that it was quite strongly rejected by the membership in Wales. And the one good thing, even though I was in favour of becoming a separate party at the right time, the one good thing was it was quite a decisive result. It wasn't that 48-52.
Right, okay.
So yeah. Things could fester. So looking at it in a more mature way now, we've got this group set up, the relevant officers within the party, to go and do the work on what are the implications for the legal implications, financial implications, membership, best and worst case scenarios, so that in a year or so's time, we can come back and it will be a membership decision and present a clear case to the membership. And that this is what it will mean. This is the opportunities, these are the threats, but this is what it means if we go out on our own. And my sense is that there is growing desire for us to go that way, but to do it in a proper and orderly fashion. I speak to the Scottish Green leadership quite often, and their advice, quite often I ask about what do they think, should we be a separate party? And say, absolutely, we should be a separate party, but get that Senate member first, have a solid foundation. So the way I see it is we will go into the Senate election in 2026 as a party that is having a grown-up discussion about becoming a separate standalone party, which I believe, I've said this many years, I think it's not only desirable, I think it is inevitable. And so I very much want us to see us go down that road, because it does go hand in hand with supporting Welsh independence.
Yeah. So in terms of the Green Party and the general Green agenda, if you like, I mean, what do you see the benefits and the opportunities of independence? Because I can imagine the argument would be, okay, the environment, though the Green Party is obviously more than just the environmental debates, but the environment is cross-border, the smoke from Chernobyl didn't really recognize the border of Ukraine and Germany, and we know the farmers and many farmers around here suffered from that. So, I mean, there could be a very strong and coherent argument made against independence or whatever. So you're obviously, to some extent, maybe going, well, although it obviously ties in with your localist agenda and philosophies as well. So what was the arguments which freed you maybe, Anthony, particular towards independence than maybe what it was maybe 10 years ago?
Well, I think we see Westminster going in one direction. You know, a Keir Starmer Labour government might slow things down a little bit, but we're already seeing them backtrack on their £28 billion investment in the green future. And again, I think it goes back to having those levers at the lowest possible level. And we're in a strange situation in Wales. And I sometimes talk about devolution failing almost, because we've got some very well-meaning politicians and activists and NGOs working in Wales, but so often the ambition is great, the implementation doesn't deliver.
Yeah.
And quite often, I've had the feeling sometimes that sometimes perhaps Cardiff Bay quite likes the fact that they don't have complete control.
Yeah, right. Well, so they can blame, so they can come out to the anti-Tory jingoism, can't they?
Yeah, it's Westminster's fault. But we saw that unravel with the Aberpergham coal mine decision, where the coal authority said Wales, Welsh government could influence the decision. And Welsh government tied himself in not saying, no, this was before that power was devolved, so it's not our decision to make. So I think we need to tap into that ambition that we have in Wales and actually get the control to enact, to make those a reality. And I think there's a great power. I've been looking at the Wellbeing Economy Alliance, bringing small nations together. I think there's a great strength in independent small nations being able to move faster and at the pace that's needed to tackle these crises. Absolutely, it's a cross-border issue. And independent Wales will be working with whatever England decide it is, an independent Scotland, United Ireland, we'll be working together. We will have to work with our closest neighbours to tackle these. As you say, emissions don't stop at the border.
Yeah.
But I think we need to devolve that power to tackle those issues to the lowest possible level, and absolutely to a Welsh government level. And I think touching on, thank you for pointing out, it's not just environment, but what we're very keen to get across is it's all interlinked. You know, the poverty in Wales, the environmental degradation, you know, the State of Nature report that showed Wales as the most nature-deprived nation on these islands, all these things are interlinked. So, you know, tackling climate crisis is tackling the inequality crisis, is tackling the cost of living crisis. And so that, again, goes back to subsidiarity. A green vision of an independent Wales would have much, much more powers in local authorities' hands as well to use to tackle these issues. And I quite often get this, because I go around Wales visiting local parties in my role as leader of Wales Green Party, and the people in the north who see Cardiff Bay is as alien to them as Westminster.
Yeah, yeah.
So it has to be a true and genuine devolution of power to tackle these crises.
Yeah, so that's where we're getting the fundamentals about the kind of independence. I mean, there's a danger if someone becomes so prescriptive that you end up having arguments, endless arguments about maybe something which possibly won't happen. But secondly, that, you know, people are upset, but also I think there needs to be some kind of baseline, what kind of an independent Wales is. And I think you can agree with things in terms of subsidiarity within Wales, which isn't politically a left or right or green or Plaid or Labour or even Tory. I mean, I think people from different perspectives can get on board with that. And I think that's very important when we look at the kind of Wales we want. I was quite struck, Anthony, the news, I mean, it's the 22nd of January 2024 today, but the news last week with the closing of part of the Tata Steelworks. An argument I've seen on Twitter, I'm not too sure, by some bots, to be honest, about, oh, this is a cost of net zero. Now, that totally threw me. I didn't, maybe it was my naivety or I hadn't taken notice, but I didn't expect that kind of argument to be made around Tata, and I don't know how much proof there is of that in any case. But there's a danger there that people are seeing, so almost any cutting jobs is now blamed on net zero. I'm seeing that's becoming a trope. And that's maybe an argument which we didn't see so much maybe 10 years ago. I wasn't so familiar with it. So, I mean, how do you answer those kind of questions? And when people then try to tie it in with one, the lack of, certainly lack of ambition and willing lack of powers from the Labour Welsh Government, then there's an argument then used that, you know, well, this is part of a wider agenda, which is where is it signed up to? I mean, is that a valid argument, do you think, or how would you tackle that?
The net zero targets are crucial. I think across the board that's recognised now. The net zero targets are crucial. What's frustrating is we've been talking about these for decades and only taking them seriously for the last few years. It's interesting for me seeing some of the people making the arts, this is net zero's fault, for the very same people used to blame Europe for everything. Farage has jumped on this bandwagon.
Yes.
This is net zero's fault. And it goes back to what I was saying about the climate crisis and equality crisis being one and the same two sides of the same coin. And we put out our response to Port Talbot, and we've been speaking about Port Talbot for a while. We've had our proposals for how the steel industry could be made green in Wales, as it has been done in other smaller countries, in Scandinavian countries, for instance. And this could have happened a long time ago. It was 2016, I believe, was the first time the possibility of switching to electric arc furnaces at Port Talbot was raised. So there's been all that dragging of feet and sort of lip service paid to, yes, we will need to change. And then you've had the UK government just handing over money with no conditions about protecting workers. And I think where we're at now, you cannot just sack those 2,800 people. The repercussions of that on that community, in the wider South Wales community. And you have to take the transition to net zero, the green transition, has to be a just transition. And there are employment opportunities in that. We will need people with the skills that you've got at Port Talbot and Tata Steelworks. So we came out very, very clearly when we said this in September when they first threatened it. And we came out very clearly last week that it's not where we'd like to be, because waste steel is produced at the moment is responsible for a vast amount of emissions. But we do agree with the unions as Greens that they should keep one blast furnace open for several years while the transition's made. Part is not just it's protecting that community, it's protecting those workers, and it's also a matter of security. At present, the UK only produces 60% of the steel it needs. So the company, which is just basically getting as much money out of the UK government as they can make the claim that they're doing this for green reasons. But really, it's is the steel that we need, if this goes ahead, is the steel that we're going to import going to be clean, green steel? Is the importation of
steel? So that's the situation. Yeah, so maybe we could be importing more steel, which is hardly a very green answer when we could be producing it here.
And as we found with energy, you're then at the risk of markets and potentially hostile players. And it's also, again, really, really evocative in Wales. Wales knows what happens when you do this to an industry. You know, we're still feeling, you know, communities across Wales are still feeling the effects of closing, just the arbitrary closing of coal mines, which at one level, from a net zero level, that had to happen eventually. But the way it was done, this is all in the interests of capital, not net zero.
Yeah, and we seem to be paying for the profits of companies and picking up the tab when they leave, which is another big issue, I think. It is interesting, because obviously one of the arguments for me for independence, and you know, I've always supported independence at an emotional level, almost, well, since as a child, I just thought that was a natural state of things. And I was always so slightly bugged, you know, or can we afford it? I wasn't quite sure. I mean, since then, every year I just get more and more convinced that we can. So I don't think it's even an argument for me anymore. I understand other people don't feel that. But I mean, one of the biggest arguments is obviously the environmental, the jobs creation, which Wales, an independent Wales, harnessing its green potential is absolutely huge. And we've benefited also with a comparatively small population. So that can be spread out quite easily. So it's not, so that's a great plus for us. I mean, I'm sure this is something which you've given a lot of thought in terms of supporting independence on a question, you know, how would we support ourselves? I mean, so what are the, you know, like the economic arguments for independence from your point of view? And obviously harnessing, obviously the environment, answering the environment question as well.
Yeah, we've got unlimited, but the massive resources of natural renewable energy sources in Wales that need to be used and harnessed. And they need to be owned at a national and a community level so that everyone really gets the benefit of that. And yet it's always the argument, isn't it? Wales couldn't afford it. And we all know there are countless examples of smaller countries that can afford it. And it's also, it then ties back and gets into sort of broader questions about what's the economy for? How does the economy operate? Who does it operate for? And independent Wales could start to explore different ways of managing the economy and measuring the economy. But I absolutely have no doubt that there isn't a financial reason to stand in the way of independence.
Yeah.
And we see the unfairness. The unfairness of the current settlement, and HS2 is the latest example of being part of this union and still not getting our fair share.
Yeah, I think it's also the question of just in, and you touched on this earlier about accountability. So we have a Labour government in Cardiff Bay, which is happy not to have powers so they can blame when powers are made for Westminster, whatever the party in power, and then, you know, it's a blame game rather than, and this is the unedifying spectacle with Tata Steelworks decision last week, from my point of view, is people just blaming each other. No one actually taking the blame for it, and also placing the blame on Tata itself, which is another important thing. I mean, I mean, the people within the SCM, we also talk about, you know, the potential in terms of a tidal lagoon, of offshore wind, the offshore wind potential, onshore wind, obviously. Use of river or hydro powers. I mean, as we keep telling people, Wales is already exporting more electricity than we use. I think we used like 60% recently of the electricity we used were actually from renewables. So these aren't pie in the sky. These aren't so dreamy. These are proper hard economic facts now. We're also producing jobs. I think a question about who owns that is very important. And I think, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, a lot of campaigns against green issues are from people feeling that someone outside is coming, taking over their hill, essentially, or their view, or their part of their heritage, and then they see none of it. You know, they see none of the economic benefit. So they're losing the cultural side, or the visual side, and they're not getting the benefit. So how do you get around that? I mean, I'm just going to say this provocatively. I mean, I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, the having local community-led initiatives or something, but are they by definition ever going to be big enough to have hands the kind of powers which we need? One, to make sure there's a benefit for people, say in Cardiff or Penarth, which is not so close, and obviously the economies of scale, not so close in terms of getting money to them, that they will support. I mean, do we need to have bigger corporations or working to get some of the money into these big projects so that people do benefit from?
I think you need a balance. I think you need nationally owned companies. But then the community owned stuff is key. So it also highlights the need for the decentralization of the grid at the moment. Right. Partly we touched on how much we export, partly the grid is, like our railway network, is built to be extractive.
Right, yeah.
So you can generate farm, you can have a wind farm near a community, and in many cases not have the ability to let that community plug in to that.
All right, I didn't know that.
So it's, and I think you're right as well, community energy or community ownership or some stake in it really changes. Again, in Scandinavia, it's very, very different where a wind farm goes up, whether it's community owned or owned by a small company or a bigger company, that local community gets buy-in, it gets cheaper bills or gets shares in the business.
Yeah.
Whereas what we see across the UK is the people making the most out of the subsidies for renewable energy are large landowners. We really don't need any more financial help.
Yeah.
So it's a lot that has to be restructured in the way it's done. But I think community buying, and it's really good to see that work happening in Wales, because I think that is the stumbling block. It's so easy to get people fired up against something that they see has no relevance to them. But if it's benefiting your community, it's creating jobs for your community. I mean, that's as we transition over time. Port Talbot is particularly well placed with its deep sea port. It could be providing all the steel and fabrication for the Celtic Sea offshore wind. Now, there are fantastic opportunities out there if you have governments at the right level and a government that has a more holistic view. And actually, getting even deeper, we need to go into set accountability. We need to go into how decisions are made, at what level do citizens have input into how those decisions are made. And these are all long-term things. None of them are easy, but they're avenues that we can't explore while we're still part of this dysfunctional union.
I mean, one of the arguments I hear by people who oppose independence, and when we come out with maybe the green argument or, you know, the kind of the economic potential of tidal power, whatever, they say, okay, well, these things cost billions of pounds. And the small country in Wales literally couldn't be able to raise that money. I think it's a total rubbish argument, because you can have shares, you can have all kind of things. But I mean, from your experience from the smaller countries, I mean, Scandinavian countries, you know, Norway's only 4 or 5 million people, Denmark is 6, Sweden maybe touching 10 by now, Finland is 5. I mean, how do they finance these big economic projects? I mean, do they go to the state, I'm guessing, pump some money into it, but do they make use of outside, as in out-state companies or institutions as well?
Slight contradiction, isn't it, Norway, because they've got their sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah, of course.
On the back of North Sea oil.
Yeah, that's something we do have. That's very handy for them to have. But,
which we, Mrs. Thatcher, quite happily squandered on our behalf.
Yes, of course.
there are various things. I mean, we, in the last Senate election, we were proposing a green transformation fund for Wales. So going into a Senate election, even as part of the leading independence, you have to look at what you can do in the here and now.
So
we're on a journey to independence. And there are limits on borrowing, there are limits on tax raising, although frustrating we're not even exploring the option. Welsh government been using the tax raising powers they've got. But you've got things that the Green Transformation Fund for Wales is scaling up something that has happened at local authority level in England. And it's issuing bonds, so not-for-profit arms-length organisation, a bit like Dŵr Cymru, so it's not subject to the borrowing rules. And that could already, in the here and now, raise significant money for community energy and local energy projects. And you then get back to the thing, and this is the frustrating thing about watching UK Labour going to a general election, that borrowing to invest in the future, whether that's renewable energy or decent housing, isn't a cost. You get that money back. So there are all sorts of models and ways of looking at it. And I think, and it would be one of the dangers, it would be one of the things you have to be very careful about, an independent Wales starting to develop its own industrial strategy and look at how we can best use our natural resources. It would be a lot of big companies that would be interested. So it would need a robust government. We'd need a government that really understood how these things work.
Yes, because this used to be the argument coming from the British left. I don't hear it often these days for some reason, was that, you know, an independent country like Wales would be at the whim of big, large multinational companies whose, you know, their annual profits is, you know, well, Welsh economy is worth about 80 billion. I think the spend of Welsh economy or government would be something like 35 billion-ish, which is basically the same as the UK's defence budget, more or less. So they say, yeah, these big companies, actually, their turnover is about the same size as your GDP. I don't know. For some reason, I don't hear the arguments quite often now. But so you do then need to have, well, I think this is where you need to have a strong constitution, I think. But also, because there will be changes of government, obviously, within a Welsh and independent Wales, as you'd hope. But how would you embed that? So whatever parties in government, obviously given the freedom to do whatever their mandate they have, but don't end up basically selling Wales or big chunks of Wales off, which is happening with smaller countries, or with the large countries, to maybe a Russian oligarch or whatever, as we're saying, in Montenegro or China buying pieces of ports across the globe.
It would be a tension, but it's a tension that the UK already faces, doesn't it? And we have a Westminster government, two main parties of Westminster, that are quite happy with that, about national institutions and national organisations being owned by anonymous oligarchs and, you know, Chinese companies. So it would be a tension. I think your key to identify, and this is one thing that we're doing quite a bit of work on in Wales Green Party at the policy level, is the constitution. That is where, and I really appreciate where the conversation's got to in independence now, that people are talking about, well, how does it work? And that, you know, the constitution for the new Wales is key to everything. And the lesson to learn, people to learn from there with South Africans, you know, when they rewrote, they wrote their new constitution, right, new nation. And there's that body of work about getting those, because you're absolutely right, we want to see governments change. It's not healthy that we have government, you know, one party in power. But we also need to know, and that's what's missing in the UK, that we need a proper, robust constitution that ensures that power can't be misused.
Yeah, and I think that's something we need to start. Well, yes, Cymru, I know, was some touched on years ago and it hasn't developed, but I think people are afraid of it as also, because it can create a lot of arguments, and I think there's been almost some kind of playing field about how deep its constitution needs to be. But the thing I think we need to be looking at as a national movement, be it political parties, yes, Cymru and other pro-independence movements as well. It gives people some kind of an idea of kind of the vehicle they're driving in. And I think that the foundations of that state then is quite important. I mean, the ownership of the land and of the assets is so, so important. And say, I mean, the Tories essentially sold out the UK assets. I'm not too sure what's left to sell now. And we're getting a ridiculous situation where things like French state businesses are running part of the UK economy without any contradiction. They seem to be quite happy that other state bodies, communist countries, whatever, run stuff in free market and others. Which brings us on to last week's commission report about the future of Wales, which, so said, well, I mean, the big thing is it's a peculiar thing to celebrate, where it says that an independence is viable, which is, it's not a ringing endorsement, but I think it is quite. And, you know, it sort of suggests every other country is viable as well, but it's something we've been saying for decades. But I think it is quite important, because in the tempered kind of language of a government commission with people from different parties and different perspectives, I think it is significant. I think Adam Price's article in Nation Cymru alluded to that last week as well. I think maybe the repercussions are only just going to be started. They won't be seen straight away. I mean, what was your reaction to the commission's work and the findings?
I think it was very, very welcome. I mean, they're obviously trying to, under their remit, be neutral. Yeah. But that was, you're right, in some ways it's an underwhelming word, but it is a milestone. It's out there now. This commission that has been fed into by lots of people, very different views, has come to the conclusion independence is viable. I particularly like the recognition that federalism, or radical federalism, as some would have it, is a good option, but isn't deliverable, because you need the agreement of England for that, you need the agreement of Westminster. So I think it was a very important piece of work, which gives a lot of stuff to fall back on for parties like ours that campaign for Welsh independence and organisations like Yes Cymru. Yeah. It's an interesting, and it showed a level of maturity as well. And I really enjoyed both giving oral evidence and submitting written evidence. It was felt like a conversation about the East. These conversations can't be undone now they've started.
Yes.
It's my feeling on it. And I think that was one of the key things in the commission as well. That the next step is enabling even further and deeper conversation and wider engagement. One of the things that was interesting about some reactions to that, it was very disappointing seeing Joe Stevens on Politics Wales on Sunday dismissing out of hand a UK Labour government. Don't expect any path to independence from a UK Labour government. And even going further, because the commission was also quite clear in the things called need to happen, whatever option we're going to use, the changes that need to happen now to secure devolution, full devolution of peace and justice, transport infrastructure, and then to see the UK Labour, essentially a UK Labour politician, dismissing even those requests. It's sort of, I think that's going to be key to the movement towards independence, because you know, Labour for Indy Wales, Lab for Indy Wales, from the outside, it seems to me like they are growing. But it seems that internal tension within the Labour Party and support for proportional representation is growing in the UK Labour Party.
Yeah.
Support for Welsh independence amongst Welsh Labour members. But that top-down, we will not contemplate this, we will not tolerate this.
I think there's a big section, I think about 50% Labour Party in Wales want a Wales SSR, isn't it? There's some kind of nominal little parliament, some not too sort of folkish culture. Be that rugby, they stand for it, and not much else. And you know, their careers depend on being not much else, and they're very jealous of losing the powers they have in Westminster to this. What they see is that I think Joe Stevens and the Kinnock sees has jumped up parish council in Senedd. And I don't know where the self respect of Welsh Labour Party Senedd members are that they can allow this to happen to them. I mean, Mark Drakeford is still the most popular politician, probably, or well-known in Wales. When you look at the DUP in Northern Ireland, ready to bring down a Tory government of the UK government, which they support, to get their way, be that right or wrong. And you think, you know, the Welsh Labour Party could be holding, you know, telling Welsh Labour and their own MPs that we want to devolve policing and judiciary. There's a very serious book written about it last year by Professor Richard Wynne-Jones and others, you know, making the arguments, not even particularly a national question, is to do with the accountability of justice and how that's implemented. And the commitment was to just a Tory Trumpian, oh, it's not worth it. I mean, there's a very interesting tweet by Professor Emmett Lewis of Aberystwyth, head of Aberystwyth Law School here at the university, and saying it's the same arguments used against devolving, disestablishment of the church was when the big lasted 60 years wasted just a debating about disestablishing the Anglican Church in Wales, which was held, it just happened in 1922, which is after the Second World War. Mm-hmm. Exactly the same kind of nonsense churned out. So I have to think, I mean, they're intelligent people in the Labour Party, they know this is nonsense. So how long are they ready to bite the lip and just be have their heads patted with some vague rugby gab game slogans and not much else? I mean, sometimes you've got to fight and fight if you believe in it, and if you believe something more than just getting a little job, ministerial job in Westminster. I don't see much change there. I think it's quite disheartening to tell the truth. I mean, and I think another Labour government will be in Westminster and certainly Cardiff Bay will bring no change. Now, that's the impression I'm also getting from people working with the civil service. There's just no movement on policies to do with the environment or, you know, and build the energy sector here. It's all very poor thinking. That's, of course, with poor thinking, you have a poor country. Yeah. And that's the political class we have. So then I think Labour people need to decide if Wales is more important than Labour Party. Yeah. And I just don't believe there's, I don't understand this weird obsession with a political party, I have to say. I just don't get that. It seems to be a proxy for a national identity for some people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, yeah, the commission, I think it's the danger, of course, is like the Silk Commission, which came out, I think, 2016 or something like 2015. This is stronger than Silk Report. The Silk Report wasn't asked to look at independence, which sort of shows the way the debate has moved on in Wales in 6 or 7 years. But that's also been ignored by the Labour Party and was totally gutted by the Labour Party working, voting with the Tories in Westminster to make sure the HS2 was an England and Wales project. when it wasn't. So, I mean, the Labour literally voted for this to keep their own constituents weak and poor. And then the media, obviously, the anti-Tory jingoism comes out when it's handy for them. So looking at the commission, I think it is a significant. I said the search report 2015, whatever, didn't discuss independence. This has discussed independence. It gives it the whole argument some kind of credibility. It's forced in the nice possible way for people to actually discuss the idea, which they maybe hadn't before. It's given a chance for people to look at it in a sensible way and, you know, come to their own conclusion, obviously. Do you think the commission will have any resonance in the future, you know, in a month's time, in 2 months' time, in 2 years' time, or will there be another commission?
Yeah, that's
it. Yeah, the Welsh situation. We'll have another committee.
Yeah. Let's have a consultation.
Yeah. Yes.
I think that's partly that it's down to pro-independence and pro-independence movements now to make sure that doesn't happen, I think, to keep pushing this up the agenda. And I think it will be a key part of the Senedd campaign in 26, how this moves forward.
Yeah.
That'll be the first time, I would say this will be the first time there'll be more than one pro-independence party with a realistic chance of getting Senedd seats. So that possibly changes the nature of things as well. You know, we are determined to get Senedd seats in 2026. That changes the dynamic when it's not just one party in the Senedd arguing for independence. We potentially, interestingly, by 2026, maybe those tensions we discussed in the Labour Party and Welsh Labour will have come to a head after two years. Keir Starmer isn't delivering for Wales. Maybe some people in Welsh Labour will have to make quite a bit of deep decision then about how long do they carry on propping up a party that isn't working for the people of Wales.
I can understand people saying they maybe don't want to go whole hog with independence, but I mean, if things like devolving policing and judiciary, is just, these are quite simple things. They're not particularly, we have devolved health, which is big and much in terms of budget and everything else than policing. So I don't know what policing is particularly a one thing within against devolving.
And of course, the Crown Estate.
That's a very, how could I forget that? Because that is huge. Another thing where Labour and Tory MPs cooperated together to get out from the Silk Commission in their so-called St David's Day deal. So, I mean, that there's actually a reason for that not to be under Senedd control. And I think that's actually resonated with the public more than many other the arguments, which is interesting. Maybe coming to the end of the discussion, Anthony, I'd like to know just a bit more about Anthony Slaughter. I mean, we've been talking about half an hour. Who are you? What do you do? How did you get into the Green Party? Why did you get into politics, Anthony? Why do it? It can be a very disappointing and lonely place to be at times.
I've been moved to Wales 20 years ago now. Before that, I was in London for 25 years. Grew up all over the world. So coming up close to Hackney is where I've spent most of my life, but Wales is starting to catch up with that. My time in Hackney in my late teens, early 20s, was very, very much involved with the anarchist squatter anarcho-punk scene. So my younger self would be horrified that I'd actually joined a political party, let alone become a leader of the party. So it was sort of 20 odd years in Hackney, been involved with all sorts of various campaigning, campaigning and activism. And I moved to Wales. I joined the Green Party in 2010, very much a dormant member, which is quite often the case with membership of political parties.
Yes.
But then I got very heavily involved in Gwyddi Up Penarth Greening here in Penarth, which was sort of a local version of Transition Towns, building community resilience, doing community schemes, community food, planting community orchards, organising food festival. And I was chair of that for a long time. And that sort of got me keen again on engagement and empowering people. And then it was the 2012 council elections when I was chair of Gwyddi Up that I was prompted to stand for the Greens. And that was a mistake because I've now stood in more elections than I can remember. we surprised because Cardiff Green Party, which covers the belt, they had their very own targeted campaign in Cardiff at the moment. And so they were happy for me to stand, but there was very little support and we got quite a good result. And then there was the parliamentary by-election that year because of Alan Michael becoming police and crime. So I went straight into my first Westminster election And it's been, yeah, it is a certain type of possibly strange person that enjoys elections and trying to.
All right, okay, that is true. Yeah, I don't get that.
Yeah. But it's been, on the whole, my involvement with the Greens has been, I found it very rewarding because we are seeing growth, and you know, we're looking at, across the board in England, we're looking at 4 MPs in a general election. That's our aim. And as I said, first Green Senate member, and key was getting our first breakthrough onto Welsh councils as authorities back in 21. We're very keen to grow that because what we've seen in other places is when people get Greens elected and they see the difference it makes the discussion and how the work they bring to it, it only increases the support for the Green vote. So that's, yeah, a very mixed upbringing all over the world. When I wasn't doing elections, I was a garden designer. I still do little bits and pieces of gardening, but that is very, very good. It's my way of going to the gym. It's very good for one's sanity outside of it. I think it's important to have things outside of the political world as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's vital for anyone's well-being, to be honest.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that grounds you as well, so you was a pun. So, I mean, right, well, that's it, Lord. Thanks for your time. Very interesting conversation. Leader of Wales Green Party, my name's Sean Robbins. I'm from the Radio Yes Cymru podcast. This will be on your favourite podcast app and also on the Yes Cymru YouTube channel. Thanks for listening. Very interesting to listen to your thoughts on how things develop, obviously, with the Green Party. And I think to some extent, to sort of mirror the change in a big section of Welsh society as well. So how things have changed last, certainly since Brexit, where I think Brexit has forced many people to ask many questions about power and who has power and why they have power and what they're doing with it. And a lot of people have come to the conclusion actually Wales can do a better job, or certainly no worse job than Westminster. And I think that's opened possibilities for people, obviously within the old Green Party and people outside any party at all, and obviously within Plaid Cymru, which has seen they've strengthened their support for independence and been more vocal about it. Until next time, I'm sure there'll be some conference or rally we'll bump into each other for Independent Wales. Thanks again for your time, and thanks for people to listening to Radio Yes Cymru podcast. We'll see you the next time.
Thank you. It's really good.
Welcome.
Yes. Yes. Yes Cymru Radio. Yes.